Hey folks, this is Don Komarechka, nature, macro, and I suppose snowflake photographer. You're listening to another great episode of the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 27. Samsung denies rumors. Again. In this episode, Samsung denies recent rumors. India gets caught faking a photo. Time Incorporated maintains its stance. Chicago pays a photographer $100,000. And Phase 1 acquires Mamiya. All that and more in episode 27 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Don, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it. If you listen to our friends over at This Week in Photo, you know who Don Komarechka is. He's perhaps best known for his work photographing snowflakes, but he does so much more and does it very well. Now, you need to check him out at donkom.com. That's donkom.com. He's got some really cool images over there, not just of snowflakes, too. So you've definitely got to check it out. It's worth a visit for sure. And stay tuned, because in this episode, we have a story coming up about Don's work. It's really sweet. I think you're really going to enjoy it. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 27 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Okay, just hours after releasing episode 26, in which I talked about the rumors of Nikon buying Samsung's mirrorless technology, Samsung denied these rumors. Of course, it would happen then, right? But I don't buy it. There's a lot of smoke here. I think something is definitely afoot. You know, I don't get a chance to use the word afoot a lot, so it made it into episode 27. There you go. Afoot. Just because Samsung denies the rumor doesn't mean that that's actual reality, and here's why. I'm no expert on these things, but I believe that they can't actually come out and announce something ahead of the actual announcement. I believe that the SEC, that's the Securities and Exchange Commission, has rules about these things, and there may be others that apply as well, at least here in the United States. Remember, these are publicly traded companies with shareholders to answer to. You make a misstatement and your stock can dive. So they have to be very careful of these things. Samsung, of course, is a South Korean company, a giant, giant company, and Nikon, not a giant company, is Japanese, but there are still rules and protocols to follow. So Samsung came out and told Amateur Photographer on Thursday, December 3rd, 2015, quote, Samsung's statement on this is as follows. Media reports that Nikon is allegedly buying our NX technology are not true, end quote. Now, mirrorless rumors, which published the original rumor after talking to, quote, trusted sources, end quote, isn't so sure. They point out that Samsung denied pulling out of camera markets before they officially withdrew from Germany and the UK. So just because they say it ain't so, doesn't mean it ain't so, you know? Something is definitely up. On the last episode, I put the rumor at 50-50. You know, it could have gone either way at that point. But even with this denial, hearing what I'm hearing from people in the industry, I'm pretty well convinced, asterisk, just in case, that something is happening between Samsung and Nikon. Something big. Now, maybe Nikon isn't buying the NX technology from Samsung. Maybe they're leasing it. I don't know. Maybe they're just partnering in some way. But it is something. It just makes sense. And if true, dollars. See what I did there? Sophisticated. I know. Rumors are swirling about Samsung having developed a full-frame mirrorless camera, which is ready for production. But wait, they just got out of key markets like Germany and the UK. So why would you do that if you're about to drop a full-frame body on the world? You wouldn't. That just doesn't make any sense. Not for a massive company like Samsung. They don't need to retreat like that and then work to take that hill again. They could plant their flag on that darn hill and ride it out. But they pulled out of those markets. They don't plan on selling Samsung cameras there. So what's going on? Given that a full-frame Samsung body doesn't make a whole lot of sense now, it makes sense that maybe Nikon is going to have it. Mirrorless Rumors writes, quote, Our very top Samsung sources confirm they successfully developed a production-ready mirrorless full-frame system camera. They reported that Nikon is very likely to use that sensor now, while the camera design may change to suit Nikon's needs, end quote. So Nikon could very well soon have a serious mirrorless camera based on Samsung's NX technology. And with CES coming next month in January 2016, that's the Consumer Electronics Show, that would be when this is officially announced, I'm thinking. But will it use Nikon's F-mount glass? That is the $60,000 question right there. If not, there's going to be a ton of disappointed Nikon users out there. Many want the cool technology that comes with going mirrorless, but they don't want to use anything other than their Nikon glass. They don't want to have to buy new lenses. They already have a stable of them. They want to use those. So that is going to be a non-starter for them. You know, Samsung is not a big name in the photography business. It just never took hold for them. But Nikon's a huge name. You ask people to name camera companies, it is most always Nikon and Canon. A company like Nikon could market Samsung's technology branded under the Nikon name and maybe, just maybe, have a viable mirrorless system for once. Viable, but not ideal. Ideal would be F-mount, of course. No F-mount, no interest for many, I believe. Well, not enough to light the world on fire, at least. It'd be a big wah-wah. However, if it's F-mount, though, wow. Now that would do some serious damage, right? Nikon would grab a ton of people who are thinking about jumping ship to Sony and the other mirrorless camera makers, mostly Sony, because they wouldn't have to ditch their current collection of lenses. Not only that, every darn lens in the Nikon lineup would be available to you, and that would be awesome. It's going to take many, many years for Sony to get the lens lineup that Nikon has. So if Nikon users could buy a Nikon mirrorless camera and use all their F-mount glass, that would be a massive, massive thing. Not only for Nikon, but the industry in general. All of a sudden, Sony is going to have to be like, whoa, we're going to have to turn things up and start cranking out lenses, and they better be darn good, because now people could buy a Nikon mirrorless camera and use any Nikon lens out there. That would be amazing. 2016 is going to be a very interesting year, as I've said. I'm hoping that somehow a Nikon F-mount mirrorless body is on its way. That would be really, really cool. So stay tuned. We'll see. I'm originally from Chicago and love that town. You'll find few cities quite as amazing as Chicago, and the people are just incredible. But what's not cool is an incident from back on May 20th, 2012, in which Getty Images freelance photojournalist named Joshua Lott was beaten by officers during the 2012 NATO summit, causing destruction of one of his cameras. This incident has resulted in the city of Chicago agreeing to pay Lott $100,000. That is a lot of money. Get it? A lot? And his name is Lott? Okay. They're not all gems, but I try. He says that he was shooting a protest downtown when he witnessed officers beating a young man with batons. When the officers noticed Lott taking pictures, they ordered him to leave. He stood his ground, as is his right as a journalist, and despite identifying himself as a photojournalist shooting for Getty, they turned their attention on him, taking him to the side of the road, throwing him to the ground, and then began beating and stomping on him, just as they did the young man. That's his claim, at least. He also alleges that one of the officers took his camera and slammed it to the ground, spiking it as if it was a football. In this settlement with the city of Chicago, he's to receive $100,000, but the city and the police officers deny wrongdoing and liability. That's something that's pretty standard for a settlement of this type. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking. You would take a beating for half of that. Not cool. I don't care how much gear that I'd buy. Too soon. Too soon. You all heard the very cool Don Komoreshka open today's show. And he's not just a cool guy because he spends so much time outdoors shooting snowflakes. See what I did there? He's also a really cool guy just in general. What's also cool is a composite photo titled The Snowflake, which was 2,500 hours and 5 years in the making. Now think about that for a second. That is dedication right there. In the composite image, there are over 400 unique snowflakes, which, according to Don, are, quote, all accurately measured and scaled so that they are in relative size to one another, end quote. Okay. Just thinking about the math involved with all that is hurting my head. But thankfully, Don loves this kind of work, and it's an obsession for him, as he says. So what he does, on average, is combine 40 separate images for each snowflake. And Don says, quote, "This is required to get the crystalline focus from tip to tip with a process called focus stacking. Due to the nature of the subject and the handheld approach to photographing each snowflake, 4 to 5 hours are spent on each image in post-processing," end quote. Of the photographs he measured, the largest was 11 millimeters in diameter and the smallest just 0.2 millimeters across. Snowflakes are truly amazing. No two will be identical, and depending on the storm, the snowflakes will actually produce different kinds of crystals. I didn't know that myself. I knew that no two were alike, but I didn't know the type of storm determined what kind was going to happen. That's cool. The working file on Don's computer is 12 gigapixels in size, which means he could theoretically make a 60 by 90 inch print at 480 DPI without losing any detail. That's 5 by 7.5 feet. Crazy, huh? If you're interested in a beautiful poster print of the snowflake at more manageable sizes like 16 by 24 inches and 24 by 36 inches, visit Don's snowflake site at skycrystals.ca/product/poster. Or you can head on over to donkom.com, donkom.com, and find your way there. Don is hands down the world's expert in photographing snowflakes. You got to check out his work. It is pretty darn cool. What's really amazing to me is that in a country with tons of outsourcing businesses, some of which do image editing work, the Indian government couldn't manage to find someone with decent enough Photoshop skills to pull off a doctored photo. Okay, a government shouldn't be doctoring photos. That's just lame. The potential for embarrassment is great. And oh yeah, it's also wrong. The latest Photoshop fail embarrassment centers around Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi and a photo which was passed off of Modi looking out the airplane window surveying Tamil Nadu in southern India, an area devastated by flooding. Now, anyone who knows even just a little bit about photography can see that the photo is an obvious fraud. And not because it's an incredibly poor composite, but because there is just so much depth of field in this photo that it would have had to have been shot at f22 with either a very slow shutter speed, which of course isn't ideal for an airplane moving quickly and the land moving behind it, obviously, or at a very high ISO. And that didn't happen. In the non-Photoshop version, you can see him looking out the round window of the airplane, and the land below is extremely out of focus. Not only that, but the rivets and such around the window are out of focus. And those are maybe a foot away from him or so. So yeah, there's no way that the flooded area would be in focus when the rivets and everything around the window are out of focus and then he's in focus. It doesn't work like that. You don't have in focus subject in your foreground, then something out of focus, and then, oh yeah, something in the background in focus. That's not how it works. It's not possible. So either their plan to shoot photos of him looking at the devastation didn't exactly go as planned, or they decided to composite in the flooding later and planned it from the start. Who knows? Either way, this hasn't helped the government's credibility one bit. India's Press Information Bureau, the PIB, had tweeted out the unaltered photo hours before sending out the Photoshopped version. So who knows what they were thinking there? They sent both versions out into the wild. That's crazy. I guess they posted it, and then sometime later, they were like, hey, you know what this photo needs? That's right. The actual devastation in focus, too. Oops. Our regular photographer was on vacation. No one will notice. Oh, but they did. And of course, they had a good time with this. The internets. That's right, the internets. Photoshop things outside the prime minister's window, like laundry in a washing machine, a cow in a flooded field, something he might have actually seen, and so much more. It was ridiculous. The PIB quickly took down the tweets after people began pointing out the flub and put out a statement saying in part, quote, "Out of the 7 pictures released, 1 picture used the technique of merging 2 pictures. This is being referred to as photoshopping in sections of the media. This happened due to an error of judgment and the picture was subsequently deleted. PIB regrets the release of the above-mentioned pictures. Inconvenience caused is regretted." End quote. It was no inconvenience. It was more like enlightening. I love how they referred to this as being a technique that was used with one of the photos where we merged two photos together. Governments aren't supposed to be merging photos. This is something that, you know, Soviet Russia did many, many years ago, and China does, and North Korea. So it's interesting to see this coming out of India. Who knew they were doing this? Who knows? Maybe there's an entire website out there of doctored images from governments. There's got to be, right? Oh, well. Gonna have to hit Google now. Data isn't out for 2015 yet, of course, because 2015's not over as I record this. But Nikkei Asian Review has published an interesting chart showing which companies topped interchangeable lens camera sales in 2014. Not surprisingly, Canon leads the pack at 43.3%. Nikon was a decent percentage behind at 32.1%, and Sony follows at 13.0%, with all other companies combined at 11.6%. It'll be interesting to see the numbers for 2015 sales, no doubt. I wouldn't at all be surprised if Sony was quite a bit higher, given the remarkable year that they had with their E-mount mirrorless systems, no doubt about it. Now, this article notes that from October 2013 through October 2015, Sony managed to grow their share of the full-frame camera market by about 400% in Germany and about 600% in the United States. Think about that. That is staggering. What company wouldn't want that kind of growth, right? We really need for the big two to hold their ground and get healthier so they can give Sony and the others a run for their money. We all win that way. 2016 is going to be a pivotal year in the camera business. There is no doubt about it. It is shaping up that way already. I think Sony is going to continue to grow and chip away at Canon and Nikon sales, unless and until the big two field mirrorless systems that are serious and fight for that market share. Right now, they're not even in the game. Okay, so they both have mirrorless offerings, but come on, they're not serious. You're not going to find anyone who would tell you with a straight face, and that includes representatives of those companies, that they have serious mirrorless systems right now, because they do not. So we're going to see how 2016 shapes up. It is going to be very interesting. Stay tuned, because you know we'll let you know about it. For about a month now, photographers have been boycotting Time Incorporated's photographer's contract, but Time doesn't seem to see a problem with it. And that's a problem. Photographers are refusing to sign it until the company revises it so the terms are more favorable. And right now, they don't exactly benefit photographers much, in my opinion. An opinion held by many photographers, actually. As we reported in episode 24, the new contract eliminates space rates, has copyright-grabbing terms, and pays less than it has in the past. Yeah, these aren't exactly favorable to photographers now, are they? According to Photo District News, a number of organizations representing large numbers of photographers are advising their members to boycott by not signing the current contract. In late November 2015, National Press Photographers Association's General Counsel, Mickey Oesterreicher, and Thomas Kennedy of the American Society of Media Photographers sent a letter to Time Incorporated on behalf of American Photographic Artists, Digital Media Licensing Association, and the Professional Photographers of America, also known as PPA. Now, you can bet that Time Incorporated isn't too excited about all this attention it's getting. That's just a guess. In the letter, they say, quote, "While we understand your desire to create a new management system that will allow you to track the use of commissioned editorial photography and to foster a consistent approach across Time Incorporated, we strongly object to the draconian terms and conditions you impose on those contractors in order to increase your profitability. Indeed, we believe the agreement as written will have the opposite effect by undermining your long-standing commitment to those who have produced those iconic images for almost 100 years. End quote. Ouch. The NPPA and ASMP do not play. Two great organizations with a history of sticking up for the interest of photographers, and they should be applauded. A corporation may not listen to one photographer, but you bet they'll listen to organizations which represent tens of thousands of them. The terms which take effect on January 1st, 2016, which is coming up in less than a month here as I record this, applies to 90 of Time Incorporated's publications and brands, including Time, Sports Illustrated, People, and Fortune. Time Incorporated doesn't seem to care that the photography world rejects this new contract, and they don't seem to be interested in budging either. as evidenced by a statement issued to PDN, that's Photo District News, in which they said, quote, "We have standardized our photography rights and rates across our brands. Our new contract is fair and equitable. Many photographers have already signed the new agreement," end quote. All right, I call BS here. This contract is crap. It just is. I fail to see what's fair and equitable about it. Time Incorporated gets all the meaningful benefit out of this, and that makes it a one-sided relationship. You know, it's been a few years since I've been published in one of Time Incorporated's publications, and I'm sure I won't be anytime soon thanks to this episode, but I'm good with that. I wouldn't sign this ridiculous contract. That is just not happening. Time Incorporated used to be great to photographers. I think it's safe to say that if you have the world's top photography organizations telling you that this contract is crap, then maybe, just maybe, it is. Now, of course, some photographers have signed this contract, but that doesn't mean much. You know, you can find photographers on Craigslist that'll shoot a wedding for free. So what? Just because some have signed it doesn't mean that everyone should. Time Incorporated, in my opinion, just doesn't get it. Take care of the photographers who supply you with the great images you're used to, and if you don't, the product is going to suffer. Can you really afford to degrade products which have fractions of the audiences that they once had? No. No, you cannot. When you see photographers as a commodity, bad things happen. So don't be surprised if the product suffers without the world's most talented photographers shooting for you. Hopefully they'll come to their senses and work something out. We all get that times are tough for the publishing business, but guess what? Times are tough for photographers too. If you're into shooting digital medium format, you may be interested to know that Phase One has acquired Mamiya and its medium format camera factories in Japan. In 2009, Danish-owned Phase One purchased a 45% stake in Tokyo-based Mamiya, which was founded back in 1940. And by owning the entire company now, they can take complete control over Mamiya's design and development for medium format cameras, shutters, and lenses. Mamiya's first medium format pro SLR camera, the RB67, launched way back in 1970 and was found in many photo studios back in the day. Same with its RZ67. They were and still are classic cameras. Phase One was founded in 1993 and their stuff is top notch. Many amazing photographers like David LaChapelle use their cameras because they are awesome. Phase One VP Niels V. Knudsen says, quote, "Phase One is now the only medium format camera company that has full internal control of all critical components in a world-class imaging system. This is the best news in many years for quality-focused photographers and imaging companies as Phase One works to consistently raise the bar in medium format photography," end quote. There's not a whole lot of competition in the digital medium format business, so we'll see how this affects pricing. But hey, if you're a digital medium format camera owner, you're already used to spending a chunk of change. What's a chunk and a half, right? If you're a Mac OS X user running Photoshop CC, you now have 10-bit color available to you. Well, with the appropriate hardware. You may remember that back in October 2015, Apple quietly unlocked 10-bit color with its release of OS X 10.11, aka El Capitan, which, by the way, was a free OS update. So if you haven't updated to it yet, you might want to give that a shot. It's not going to cost you a thing. Well, Adobe has quietly expanded 10-bit support in Photoshop CC to OS X in their latest update, which also brought with it custom toolbars and a number of other cool new features. Interestingly, though, Adobe made no mention of this when they announced the latest Photoshop CC update, a feature which was released for Windows users in Photoshop CS6 way back in April of 2012. Now, Adobe tells us, quote, "It's enabled as an option in the advanced GPU preferences, if the machine supports it, e.g. the new Retina 5K iMac supports it," end quote. When asked why it wasn't publicly touted, we were told that it was because, quote, "it was something that it was added to the product close to launch," end quote. So if you're on a compatible Windows or Mac computer and have a display which supports 10-bit, you can now enable this feature. You do that by opening your preference panel and then select the Performance tab. From there, you click the Advanced Settings under Graphics Processor Settings, then check the 30-bit display checkbox if you see it there. That's the key part, if you see it there. With those simple steps and the appropriate hardware, You can now edit your photos with billions of colors instead of the 16.8 million colors you had just moments earlier. Now, whether or not you can see billions of colors is a whole nother matter. I updated my iMac to the latest version of Photoshop CC, and I can see that 30-bit display text and checkbox, but cannot click it. I've got a 5K Retina iMac, but it's just not the most recent model. So for now, 16.8 million colors it is. You know what? I doubt I'd see the difference anyhow. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 27 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. Now, if you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question to answer here on the show, something that not many people do because everyone's shy. Or you can give us a call at area code 206-333-9308. We'd love to answer any questions you have here on the show, but everyone's shy, like I said. So maybe email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 28. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.